Here's Andy Udman.
Give me that morphine, codeine. Give me that buprenorphine, butorphanol, pentazocine. But don't get that bottle popping, cause these opioid analgesics make you drowsy. CNS depression binds to opiate receptors, alters your perception. Perception.
Headline about American health tonight, and pills and painkillers, a hidden epidemic striking our neighbors and our families. A new alert tonight from the CDC says the number of women dying from overdoses in America is skyrocketing. More women die from overdoses on all drugs than die from car accidents.
Painkillers. When we take them, we can stand. Nervous triggers causing pain. Take the meds better than anesthetics. Now I'm feeling so high on analgesic.
Pam Kalina asked me, are you in love with Diane Sawyer? I said, no, I'm not in love with Diane Sawyer. I just enjoy watching ABC News. Rick, can you play that clip again? I can't believe what she just said about these prescription drug overdoses.
Headline about American health tonight, and pills and painkillers, a hidden epidemic striking our neighbors and our families. A new alert tonight from the CDC says the number of women dying from overdoses in America is skyrocketing. More women die from overdoses on all drugs than die from car accidents.
More women die from drug overdoses.
That's right. Yeah. What they're saying is the deaths from prescription painkiller overdoses among women have increased by more than 400% since 1999. So this is a rising epidemic.
But it's only in the United States. Canada wouldn't be.
Oh, it's happening here, too. Hundreds of people die every year from painkillers.
Pam, every time we raise this subject of painkillers, the phone lines light up. Folks, the lines are open, 643-1290. Wow, this is a very sobering subject. And that statistic alone is just jaw-dropping.
That's right. And this morning we have a guest on the show who 10 years ago wrote a book about painkillers. 10 years ago, Andy, writing this book as a clarion call, warning people about this problem. And now this year, 2013, our guest this morning, Barry Meyer, has written a new book about this phenomenon and the problems with painkillers. And Barry joins us this morning. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
Barry, give us that title of your book. What a title it is.
The book is called A World of Hurt, Fixing Pain Medicine's Biggest Mistake. It's an e-book, available through Amazon and those types of outlets. And as you pointed out, it's 10 years after I wrote a book called Painkiller. And during that time, the use of these drugs has skyrocketed, and opioid-related deaths, overdose deaths, have gone up four times. I mean, it's been remarkable to watch this whole tragedy unfold over the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
Barry, I am trying to wrap my mind around that figure that Diane Sawyer gave about more women dying from these drugs than from car accidents. That's shocking.
It's incredibly shocking. And one of the things that is remarkable in this whole episode is that it's not just people who are abusing these drugs who are getting into trouble. There's more and more information that patients who take these drugs as prescribed are having bad side effects as well. These drugs do work for some patients, but for many, many others, they're having serious side effects, complications, and problems.
Now, the question I have is this. When you assemble these figures, how are these people dying? Are they dying from the effect directly from the effects of these drugs? Or are they so driven to despair that they are taking their own lives?
I think that, by and large, the majority of these deaths involve people who are overdosing on these drugs. They're mixing these drugs with alcohol. They're mixing them with antidepressants. And they're basically dying because of these drug combinations. The principal drug involved, however, are these narcotic painkillers, which involve drugs like oxycodone, which is found in OxyContin and Percocet, hydrocodone, which is found in Vicodin, methadone, this entire class of narcotic painkillers.
Now, what is happening in the medical community to prevent this problem? I mean, are doctors being trained to identify the issue with addiction? Are they able to identify when people are doctor shopping so that they can get two or three prescriptions of these medications? What is happening to prevent it?
Well, in the last couple of years, there's been an awakening, certainly here in the U.S., and I think there's some forward-thinking doctors in Canada as well, who realize that They have to be a lot more careful when they prescribe these drugs to begin with. You know, about a decade ago, there was this idea that these drugs were actually safe for patients, that they could take them in at any dosage they needed to, and things would be just okay. And there's been this unfortunate realization that was something of a pipe dream.
Yeah, well, it was with heroin, too. I mean, if we look at the history of the opiate drugs.
You're absolutely right. It's a steady march of illusions where these pain medications are concerned. So docs are looking at patients more closely and also thinking about treating their pain in other ways than bombarding it with narcotics. I mean, that is part of the story I try to tell in this book, and that is that there's no one-size-fits-all cure for people who have long-lasting pain, but there are ways that pain can be treated that are not only safer than using prescription opioids, but in the end cost a lot less for us as a society.
Barry, I can't believe how timely this conversation is. It was just a couple of nights ago. I watched that report from Diane Sawyer on ABC News. Rob, we're going to get to you in just a moment. The phone lines are lighting up. But Rick, if we could play that report from ABC News, Diane Sawyer, just a couple of nights ago on this incredible, incredible problem of people dying from these particular drugs, these painkiller drugs, which they get so addicted to that they can't part from them. They can't stop using them. They become less effective, so they take more of them, and so they're caught in this deadly downward spiral.
Nagin Narmohammadi started with just 2 pain pills a day, relief from the chronic pain of Crohn's disease. Within months, she was up to 70 to 80 pills a day.
It just kind of spun out of control without me even realizing what happened.
Today, that new government report revealed a woman is admitted to the ER for a prescription pill overdose every 3 minutes. What's more, the number of women dying from prescription pill overdoses jumped 400% between 1999 and 2010. And across the country, women called in to share their struggles with addiction.
I was very good at hiding it for a long time. I was very manipulative.
It consumed my entire life, my whole day.
My days were not normal unless I took my medication.
How could I be addicted? You're prescribing this stuff to me.
Doctors tell us women are more likely to suffer from painful conditions like fibromyalgia and migraines, often treated by prescription pain pills.
Why are women more likely than men to become addicted to prescription painkillers?
Well, women tend to be prescribed prescription pain medications more commonly than men. Also, women tend to be smaller in size, so the dose is actually larger for women who are smaller in size.
Women are also more likely to consult doctors for pain, and the CDC says are more likely to go doctor shopping, getting prescriptions from multiple providers. Nagin told us she saw her primary doctor and then 4 others on the side.
One doctor was like 90 years old, and he was writing me a prescription a week, and he didn't even realize it.
This is staggering news, Aditi. So what are you supposed to do with it? What's next? What can be done?
Doctors we talked to, Diane, say that women need to make sure they don't stockpile medicine, that they just don't keep pills lying around just in case. They also need to make sure that every doctor that they have is aware of every pill that they're taking so they don't accidentally become addicted.
And maybe start talking about it more with each other. Aditi Roy, again, welcome to ABC News. It's great to have you here.
Of course, the temptation is to say, well, it's an American story, Andy, so why are you focusing on this American story? Well, we often find out that if it's a problem south of the border, it's a problem here. Let's go to the phone lines. Rob, what's your story?
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Andy. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, I just wanted to share a little bit of my story. Back in 2003, when I was involved in a motor vehicle accident, I was 33 years old. I'd never taken a painkiller in my life and left the hospital with basically a 3-month prescription for Percocet. And I was told I could be taking, you know, 2 every 4 hours and so on. And at the time, I was not told anything about addiction. I wasn't told that, really anything, that they were going to wean me off, nothing like that. So basically, and of course, these things are just like a wonder drug, right, for the first time you ever take them. And then, you know, next thing you know, it's a few months has gone by and you can't stop yourself. In a short period of time, the biochemistry in your brain just changes and you just can't function without them, you know. And it got to the point for me, on and off until 2009, I nearly died. I was down to 118 pounds from these things. And you just can't help yourself. And since I've been clean and sober since 2009, I just want to add a little bit to your story. I just have to be careful of what I say. But I'm in the funeral services industry now, and I could speak for hours on overdose and painkillers and death and the whole gamut of that. So I just want to say that the doctors are the ones that have to take, every time they write a prescription, they should be telling you and taking the 5 minutes to talk to you about the drug they're giving you, because they didn't for me, and it eventually, well, almost killed me, right?
Rob,
and
Rob, that's
a grown man to be 118 pounds, Andy, and, you know, but there, you know, I just wanted to say that, though, there is help, and you can, because, as I say, I was on death's door, and here we are, you know, a little bit over 4 years from my sobriety date, and, you know, I'm as strong as ever, right? So you can beat it, but these doctors are the ones that have to be held accountable, because they're the ones that give it out, and the addiction has to start somewhere. And when it starts, I would say 90% of the time.
Rob, so what you're saying, Rob, you're in the funeral home industry, so I take it you go around and you pick up the bodies.
Yeah, I work for a removal service.
And do you
deal with all the homicide?
Do you
stuff.
Do
yeah.
When you pick up these bodies, do you often see bottles and pills?
Andy, truth be told, it's probably 80 to 90% of the time, right? It really is, and it's a lot of times it can be accidental, and you know I can speak for me back then too. Like, you don't sometimes even realize what you're doing, because you said it a few minutes ago that sometimes you just have to keep taking more to try to get that feeling you first had, right? And before you know it, like 80 to 90 pills a day or whatever that other person was taking, that's insanity.
When you see these bodies, Rob, when you see these bodies and you see the pills, do you say, there, but for the grace of God, go I?
Andy, I'll break down. I really, it's tough, because you know, there's lost souls out there, and as they say, we got to start somewhere. And people don't want to really talk about this kind of stuff. Or, you know, you see what Diane Sawyer was talking about. Like, they may do something once a year about something like this, but it's such, you know, an epidemic that we're really not helping each other out there, because nobody really, really wants to talk.
Okay, I want to get back to Barry, but just before we let you go, Rob, I want to ask you this, because people are asking, how did you get clean, and what advice do you have for our listeners right now who are going through the trauma that you were then? They're going through it right now. What did you do, Rob? What do you suggest they do?
Well, I'll tell you, Andy, it's not easy. It's really not. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, but I had to change my focus, like just changing your surroundings sometimes. And that's really, you know, that's what started me, was just focusing on my family, because at the time I had kids. I had no business being on this stuff. So you just sort of have to change your focus, because when you take these drugs, they alter your mind and your biochemistry, so you're not thinking you're doing anything wrong. So you just have to change your focus and your, you know, just your surroundings, because as they say, there's no immediate help out there. You have to do the hard work for yourself, but I'm telling you right now, you can get clean.
Rob,
right? You can.
Rob, you and I need to chat again. I thank you so much for your call.
It is a pleasure. Thanks, Pam. Thanks, Andy.
Wow. Thanks, Rob.
Wow. You never know in talk radio who's going to call, but who would have thought that we would have someone call who's in the body removal business, and it would see firsthand exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. I know Rob, and he's seen this problem accumulate year after year after year in the business, so it's not getting any better.
Barry, what do you think of the call we just had?
You know, it's pretty stunning. I guess what's really stunning about it is that this has been going on for more than a decade. Now, I heard from a friend whose teenage son was prescribed large amounts of Dilaudid, which is even a stronger drug than Percocet, a stronger painkiller, for a back injury, and he subsequently became addicted, and that doctors today are prescribing people large quantities of these drugs, continue to do that a decade after folks like your caller got them, is remarkable to me. It's also remarkable to me that in the Diane Sawyer piece, there was a discussion about these drugs being prescribed for women with fibromyalgia and with migraine headaches. Every piece of medical information that I've seen suggests that these drugs should never be prescribed for those conditions. Those are bad conditions for these drugs to be used for.
Now, what are you seeing on the streets, though? I mean, we have terms out there like hillbilly heroin. We hear about problems happening in the Ozarks and problems happening in Florida. where people have way too much access to these drugs. People are potentially even snorting the crushed pills. We hear story after story about what's happening on the streets as well.
Well, for many years here in the States, we had a succession of so-called pill mills, of these kind of faux pain clinics that sprung up where people could go in, they could pay cash, and they could basically tell the doctor what kind of drug they wanted. And often it was a narcotic painkiller. And fortunately, many of those now have been closed down, but it was 10 years when that was going on. And we've got people who are addicted to these drugs who are now moving on to heroin or illicit drugs. And it's sort of like a balloon. You squeeze one part of it and, it pops out in another area. So I guess, my overall feeling and the reason for writing the second book was to try to start a conversation or add to a conversation about how we should be treating pain, what types of treatments are available to patients, and where should we be focusing our resources.
I want to ask you about that in just a moment. Barry, are you able to stay with us? We have to take a short news break at the bottom of the hour. That would be wonderful. But before we get to the solution, I just want to make sure that we have a good handle on the problem. The figure I'm looking at, the current statistic, is that about 16,000 people a year die of overdoses involving prescription narcotic. A huge problem. The number of people dying from these drugs is second only to the number of people that die in car accidents. Somehow here in London, Ontario, we're thinking, well, American problem, not as serious here, you would say?
From what I've heard up there, it's quite serious.
Very serious.
As serious from the number of deaths proportionally as it is here in the United States.
Okay, we're going to go back to the phone lines again because the phones have just been ringing steadily and my producer's been taking many of the calls off the air. Pam, you run boot camps. You run into these people.
I talk to people all the time who are either addicted to these drugs or who have come off these drugs and they're in sort of a rehab mode. It's a real problem out there. It's devastating in terms of their long-term emotional effects, mental effects of these drugs.
One thing we don't want to do is leave our listeners who are in this particular drama right now hanging without a solution. So we're going to be back with author Barry Meyer in just a moment to ask him, are there solutions and what are they? We'll keep the phone lines open, 643-1290. Barry Meyer, a New York Times reporter, author of A World of Hurt, Fixing Pain Medicine's Biggest Mistake. We'll be back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
A new alert tonight from the CDC says the number of women dying from overdoses in America is skyrocketing. More women die from overdoses on all drugs than die from car accidents.
Pam, this story is so fresh. It is so new and yet so old. I'm thinking it's fresh in the sense of it just broke in the news a couple of days ago. I want to run that report again from ABC News, a very familiar source of news for so many people, just to dramatize how incredibly real this problem is. Rick, if we could have Diane Sawyer's report again. Here we go.
Nagin Narmohammadi started with just two pain pills a day, relief from the chronic pain of Crohn's disease. Within months, she was up to 70 to 80 pills a day.
It just kind of spun out of control without me even realizing what happened.
Today, that new government report revealed a woman is admitted to the ER for a prescription pill overdose every 3 minutes. What's more, the number of women dying from prescription pill overdoses jumped 400% between 1999 and 2010. And across the country, women called in to share their struggles with addiction.
I was very good at hiding it for a long time. I was very manipulative.
It consumed my entire life, my whole day.
My days were not normal unless I took my medication.
How could I be addicted? You're prescribing this stuff to me.
Doctors tell us women are more likely to suffer from painful conditions like fibromyalgia and migraines, often treated by prescription pain pills.
Why are women more likely than men to become addicted to prescription painkillers?
Well, women tend to be prescribed prescription pain medications more commonly than men. Also, women tend to be smaller in size, so the dose is actually larger for women who are smaller in size.
Women are also more likely to consult doctors for pain, and the CDC says are more likely to go doctor shopping, getting prescriptions from multiple providers. Nagin told us she saw her primary doctor and then four others on the side.
One doctor was like 90 years old, and he was writing me a prescription a week, and he didn't even realize it.
This is staggering news, Aditi. So what are you supposed to do with it? What's next? What can be done?
Doctors we talked to, Diane, say that women need to make sure they don't stockpile medicine, that they just don't keep pills lying around just in case. They also need to make sure that every doctor that they have is aware of every pill that they're taking so they don't accidentally become addicted.
And maybe start talking about it more with each other. Aditi Roy, again, welcome ABC News. It's great to have you here.
If you have just joined us, Pam Killeen, along with Andy Udman, in conversation with New York Times reporter Barry Meyer, who's written the book A World of Hurt, Fixing Pain Medicine's Biggest Mistake. And as you heard in that report, this is a shockingly common problem, with deaths among women higher for these prescription painkillers than they are for car crashes, if you can imagine. Barry, you've written this book. What's been the response to your book and your tearing back the mask from the state of health in America?
Well, it's been very positive, Andy. When my first book came out a decade ago, it was, let's stick our head in the sand and pretend that what's in this book doesn't exist. There's a much more receptive audience now, but there still is a tremendous amount that needs to be done to make alternative pain treatments available to people, and to sensitize both doctors, patients, and their families to this problem and to, how to start thinking about it somewhat differently.
Now, the CDC did come up with some recommendations in this recent report. They're recommending that healthcare providers do a better job anyway of recognizing that women are at greater risk of prescription painkiller overdose. They want practitioners to follow guidelines for responsible prescribing, including screening and monitoring for substance abuse and mental health problems. And they want to use prescription drug monitoring programs to identify patients who may be improperly obtaining or using prescription painkillers and other drugs. So those seem to be the three highlighted recommendations from the CDC. Do you see any implementation of these types of initiatives?
Well, we started to implement them here in the U.S. They've been going on for a couple of years, and they're all very critical. What I would add to that is that patients need to make sure that the doctor they're seeing is someone who's knowledgeable about this area, as opposed to someone who's just pretending to be knowledgeable about this area. If they're, prescribing you huge shipment, huge amounts of these drugs, that's not necessarily a doctor you want to go to see. I would also say that patients and their family members and doctors need to start lobbying insurance companies, their politicians, anyone who has the money and can make a difference, to start looking at other ways of treating chronic pain than simply prescribing drugs.
I hear a lot of concerns over doctors, and they're not really trained to help people come off these drugs. Then this seems to be quite the dilemma.
It's a big dilemma, and it's a big dilemma for patients, because as you might imagine, once you become accustomed to being on these drugs, you develop a physical dependency. Sometimes you develop a psychological dependency. So there's great anxiety for patients about leaving these drugs. And in fact, people tend to almost become addicted to them because they'll start taking these drugs because they fear the next pain attack down the road. So that increases the anxiety. So we need doctors who are both well-trained in identifying who should be getting these drugs, and also doctors who are sensitized to the idea that when they see a patient who is not benefiting from these drugs, either in terms of reduced pain or in terms of improved physical function, that is, they function better when they're on these drugs, that they need to either start taking the patient down or referring them to a specialist who knows how to do that.
Barry, we talked about all the deaths, but I'm thinking of all the people in between, the people who are suffering from the pain, who are taking the drugs, finding that they're becoming less and less effective, taking the drugs with a higher dosage and finding it's a downward spiral. Are these people able to function in society? Do they show up for work in the morning?
Well, you're making a very good point. Well, we see these headlines about deaths, and that grabs our attention. but there is a perhaps bigger problem among people who are not benefiting from these drugs, who've been put on these drugs, whose doses have increased over the years, and who essentially have become captives of these drugs. And what we see here in the U.S., there's data to show that, let's say, someone who sustains a back injury at work, very commonplace injury, if they are prescribed high levels of these drugs in the aftermath of such an injury, they're far less likely to go back to work than a person who is prescribed more moderate doses of these drugs or none of these drugs at all. So there's a real direct correlation between how commonplace injuries are treated with these drugs and this growing mass of people who have become either chronically unemployed or disabled because of this type of medical treatment.
I don't know if you have any numbers, but if the numbers suggest that more women are dying from these painkiller drugs and die in car crashes, I can't even imagine how many people are in the situation that you just described. I'm going to ask you to comment on that in just a moment. We want to go back to the phones. Josie, what's your story?
Yes, good morning. I'm an injured worker. I was injured a number of years ago. I have a neck injury, and I suffer with migraines, vertigo, and chronic neck pain. And over the years, previous family doctors wanted to put me on painkillers, prescription. I think one of them was OxyContin, and I said no, and I kept saying no. And, in fact, more than one doctor accused me of not wanting to help myself, and I said, well, I don't want to become dependent on any painkiller or any medication. Can you direct me to some other form of therapy like physio or massage? And they said, well, that can help, but it won't help as much. But I kept refusing, and it didn't go over very well with workers' compensation. They, too, believed that my pain couldn't be that bad if I kept refusing to take any painkiller.
So there's pressure from the medical establishment for you to be actually on these drugs.
And from workers' compensation. Because they won't accept anything less if you don't want to help yourself by following doctors' suggestions, then it can't be you can't be a legitimate case.
So, Josie, how did you deal with the pain?
Well, I deal with it. I've gone back to physiotherapy, chiropractic therapy. I've considered massage therapy, and there's this one clinic I won't name that offers therapy for vertigo. So I want alternative form of therapy, not to be relying on medication.
I think in the end it would be a lot less expensive for the system for people to choose these modalities over the opiate drugs, because look at the devastation that's going on with regards to the opiate drugs right now. That's costing us a lot of money, not just lives, but a lot of money.
But isn't the problem that when you first take these drugs, they are effective and you find tremendous relief? It's when you get a little further down the road and you're finding you need more and more of them, but by that time you're addicted, they're less effective, so you need more and more, and it's a downward spiral.
Yeah, vicious cycle.
If I may say,
sure.
You asked me how do I deal with it. Well, there are some days where I just am, I'm pretty much bedridden. I just can't do very much. There are those bad days, and then there are days where I just fight through it. I just live with it, basically.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Our hearts go out to you, Josiah. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. Some really painful stories people dealing with this. Linda, what's your story?
Hi, actually, mine is very similar to your previous caller. And there is a lot of pressure, and if you don't sort of give in, you don't have a lot of luck.
How do you stand up to a doctor using $50 words, and with all those books on the shelf and the degrees and the certificates, how does
he... That was the other comment I was going to make. I believe that men are much more vocal, and men, like when it comes to work, I was told over 20 years ago, oh, just quit your job. And I was a single mom. I don't know how you do that. You know, I think maybe to work better with people, to explain what is wrong with you. Like, I have more deteriorating problems, and I'm told, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. But they want you to go to physio, and I was actually sent away from physio because we don't have coverage. And she was taking cash from me, and she said, I can't keep taking your money because I can't help you.
So how do you deal with this
issue? You just speak up. Like, I do that with my doctor. I prefer to not take that. And then they say, well, I don't know what to do with you. I'll send you here. And you just keep going around in circles. They tried to put me in for surgery. They won't even look at it. I've heard whispers here that unless you're 100% risk, they won't do it.
So how do you deal with the pain, Linda?
Oh, well, right now I take shots. I've managed to get a nerve blocker shot, which I go for every 3 months.
And is it effective?
It is, but I have to mind what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I have to not cause more problem because I can't feel it, right?
Wow. What's your warning to these people who are taking these pain medications? And
oh, I have a sister who does that, and it scares the heck out of me. I talk to her all the time about it. Are you sure you know what you're taking? And she's one of those people, she doesn't get around very easy at all. She has pills in the living room and in the office, and, you know, it's scary.
It's pills.
I've seen a lot of people that get hooked on drugs, and I don't want to be there.
If she doesn't get off that train, you know what the end result could very
it's
well.
It's frightening, yeah.
Linda, I appreciate the call. Let's go to Dan. Dan, go ahead.
Oh, hi, Andy. I know four people that are using two different doctors, one to get their Oxycontin, the other one to get their methadone, and these guys are just like major pill heads. And I mean, and these are professional people. These aren't just, you know, the average dude in the street. These are people that are very, very high up on the ladder, working at the universities and have very prominent jobs, and just cannot believe. And they never had any pain. I mean, they had an injury at one time. Now, all of a sudden, they're hooked. So they're trying to do everything they can. It's the point where I know one family that insisted the husband go to intervention to try and get off the problem. And he laughed at him and said, that won't work.
Wow. Dan, I thank you for the call. We got a bad line. Barry Meyer, I have to ask you, we didn't have to go out and do the research. We didn't have to write a book. We just opened up the phone lines, and we got another book for you. It's almost like a no-brainer. The evidence is so real, so raw, and so out there.
Yes, and I guess what is also real and raw and so out there is the seeming inability of governments, of companies, of insurers to kind of stare this in the face and decide we're going to do something differently about this. We're not going to keep following this model that we've been following for the last decade that has produced all these problems, all these costs, and all these personal tragedies.
Is it a fact that the people are addicted to the drugs just as much as the drug companies are addicted to the money these people are giving them?
You know, drug companies would say and would stand up and say these drugs are valuable, and they are for some people. They would stand up and say, we don't intend, doctors need to control these drugs better, and they actually do. We need to come to grips with this as a society. The governments in our countries need to come to grips with this. Companies need to come to grips with this, and insurers need to come to grips with this.
Barry, we have time for one more call before we're going to ask you to wrap it up and put a little bow on it. Jim, what's your story?
Good morning. Let me preface what I'm going to say by saying that I'm a chiropractor. I've been practicing for 32 years in London. And last year, I attended a St. Joe's Hospital pain management seminar. I was the only alternative practitioner at the seminar. And I can tell you that we don't have all the answers to pain management and chiropractic. But when we talk about evidence-based care, which is what the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care and the medical community look for, the evidence for what we do is as good as or slightly better than just about every other approach to even acute or long-term chronic pain. And we don't have the comorbidities that pop up after you start managing these problems medically, like addiction, like gastrointestinal ulceration, those types of issues, which require additional care and additional stress on the healthcare system. This seminar that I went to pretty much disregarded anything but the medical management of problems. They did give 30 seconds of lip service to what physiotherapy, massage therapy, chiropractic, acupuncture do, and then went on to talk about the administration of opiates. And I don't know if people are aware or not, but a common problem, especially among women, is fibromyalgia. And it's recently been given the actual credence it deserves. It was often thought of as just a problem of the head rather than of the body. But the most common treatment was the administration of opiates, which has, according to the evidence, absolutely no benefit to the problem of fibromyalgia. And mild to moderate activity was a much found to be in studies a much better alternative to the opiates. And this is the type of a healthcare administration that goes on within the medical community.
In the seminar, did they address the addiction issue, some of these points that the CDC have brought up in this report?
They did, but they just kind of threw their shoulders up and their hands up and said, but this is all we have. These are the tools we have. And, you know, at the time, they were coming up with the new alternative to oxys, which the Oxy Nuvo, and they said, but they won't be able to crush this and snort it or shoot it. And, you know, I talked to addicts who come into my office, and they said within 3 hours of those drugs coming out, it's all over the Internet on how to use them the way they use the old oxys. Addicts aren't stupid. They make stupid choices, but they're not stupid people.
Wow. Hmm. Wow. What a story from a chiropractor. I wish we had more time, but Barry, we have to wrap it up and put a bow on it. What do you say to those people who are listening this morning who are in this situation right now, addicted to painkillers? They're taking more and more, suffering more and more side effects, a downward spiral, which leads to death.
Well, naturally, for those people, you want to say, please seek out treatment, or to their family members, please get your family member into treatment. There are useful, important ways of dealing with addiction. For those people who are experiencing chronic pain, who find themselves on high levels of these drugs and not really gaining relief from it, you want to say to them, please seek out alternative treatments to this. There's important data from here in the States, studies from the Mayo Clinic, the Veterans Administration, that, you know, combinations of physical therapy, behavior modification, and psychological counseling can be as effective as these powerful painkillers in treating pain.
Barry, I wish we had more time. It's been absolutely fascinating. Barry Myers, the New York Times reporter who's written the book A World of Hurt, Fixing Pain Medicine's Biggest Mistake. Barry, it is a matter of life and death for so many people. And again, that absolutely shocking figure that more women die from this particular issue, prescription painkiller drugs, than die in car crashes. Wow. Thanks, Barry.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Barry.
Wow.
An amazing book, an amazing story. Yeah. And like Diane Sawyer said, we have to start talking about this more.
Wow.
It's a big problem.
11 o'clock news. When we come back, we're going to lighten it up a little bit. We're going to go overseas to Buckingham Palace, where Kate is ready to push. She's not too posh to push. We're going to talk to a midwife in London about how she could change a lot of women's mind about what's the best way to have a baby.